Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Today is Thursday, April 16th. What to know today about President Trump's expected announcement involving plans to reopen some states. And a new report about China's government explains how just 6 days could have made a big difference in this pandemic. Plus, we're talking about a new planet, a new iPhone, and a new role for Lyft drivers. Then hang out after the news for Thing to Know Thursday's bonus interview about COVID-19 treatments and testing with a doctor on the front lines of this fight. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in less than 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. Today, President Trump is expected to unveil new federal guidelines for reopening the country. He says data shows the United States has passed the peak of the coronavirus outbreak, so now is the time. However, the president did say individual governors will make final decisions about how and when to reopen their states. And that's a bit of a reversal from earlier this week when Trump called himself the ultimate authority. But really, it seems everyone agrees now. Reopening will work the same way shutting down did. The federal government will make recommendations. The states make the final call. Of course, different states may get different advice about how to handle easing stay-at-home restrictions, since some are closer to containing this virus than others. The director of the CDC says he believes 19 or 20 states may be ready to reopen as soon as May 1st. He didn't list which ones, but said they'll be the states that still have not been impacted much by COVID-19 at this point. Keep in mind, the government's top doctors have all said some level of social distancing will still be part of this strategy, and a gradual reopening is likely. It's also worth noting both health officials and business leaders warned this week more testing is needed to convince the public to get back to work. We'll see if Trump addresses that today, so stay tuned. The coronavirus pandemic has now infected more than 2 million people worldwide, and more than 134,000 people around the globe have died from it. As bad as that sounds, the actual number could be even higher due to testing shortages, unreported cases, and suspicions that some governments are hiding the true scope of their nation's outbreaks. Here in the United States, New York is still the state with the highest death toll by far. There are some good signs there, though. The number of hospitalizations have been down all week. But about 2,000 New Yorkers are still being diagnosed each day, so the state is not out of the woods. In fact, New York's governor just issued an executive order yesterday saying everyone must have a face covering over their mouths and noses while in public. Governor Cuomo said if people don't follow it, local governments may need to come up with some kind of penalty. Maryland's governor also issued a similar order this week, saying coverings need to be worn in all stores and on public transportation. Well, one day after President Trump cut funding to the World Health Organization, its leader is now responding, saying he doesn't think Trump's stance will last too long into the future. But for now, the WHO director general said the UN Health Agency will just have to work with other partners to fill the financial gaps and make sure work continues uninterrupted. He added, now is the time to be united against COVID-19 and that his focus will stay on ending this pandemic. Remember, the United States is the biggest overall donor to the WHO, contributing around 20% of its budget. But President Trump accused the organization of making costly mistakes in its initial response and being too heavily influenced by the Chinese government. That said, some public health experts, even here in the U.S., are condemning the president's decision to cut funding, calling it short-sighted. The American Medical Association's president said it's, quote, a dangerous step in the wrong direction that will not make defeating COVID-19 any easier. She then strongly urged President Trump to reconsider. But Trump does have support within his administration. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo told Fox News the president has to put the pressure on to make sure the world has, quote, accurate, timely, and effective information about the global health space. At this point, it's not clear when or if funding will resume. Another new report shows there's good reason to be skeptical of China. The Associated Press found 6 key days in which the country did not warn the Chinese people. The AP obtained internal documents that showed the head of China's health commission determined a pandemic was forming, and he relayed that information to top officials, including President Xi. But the public was not warned until days later, on January 20th. Apparently, in that time, the city of Wuhan hosted a mass banquet for tens of thousands of people. Millions of people were traveling for Lunar New Year celebrations, and 3,000 new people were infected. Remember, Wuhan in China is where COVID-19 originated. An epidemiologist at UCLA said, had China taken action 6 days earlier, there would have been way fewer patients and medical facilities would not have been overwhelmed. But other experts defend China, saying the government may have waited to limit hysteria and actually did take action privately within that time. And China's Health Commission responded to the AP's report, denying it purposely suppressed information and insisting China took responsible and timely action. There's another endorsement for Joe Biden to tell you about. This time, it's Senator Elizabeth Warren. She's the most recent ex-presidential candidate to throw her support behind the presumptive Democratic nominee. Her supporters have been waiting for this endorsement since she dropped out of the race last month. Warren posted a nearly 4-minute video saying Biden has a good heart, and that's what the country needs in a leader. She also told MSNBC she would accept the job as vice president if Biden asked. Remember, Biden has promised to choose a woman as his running mate, but exactly who is still a question mark. To be continued. All right, we have more news ahead, but first let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor this week, Rothy's. Especially in these uncertain times, Rothy's hopes to brighten your day with beautiful, sustainable products and content. And just in case you haven't heard of Rothy's, it's a company making super stylish and sustainable shoes and bags. They're carefully crafted with eco-friendly materials like repurposed plastic water bottles and marine plastic. I chose a pair of bright red Rothy's shoes that are the most comfortable flats I've ever owned. And they cheer me up every time I put them on because they're so colorful. In fact, Rothy's come in an ever-changing array of colors, prints, and patterns, and in a range of styles. And there's more. They're also fully machine washable. Every time they need a refresh, you can simply toss them into the washing machine. So check out all the amazing shoes and bags available now at rothys.com/newsworthy. That's Rothy's, R-O-T-H-Y-S, rothys.com/newsworthy. Style and sustainability meet to create your new favorites. Head to rothys.com/newsworthy today. Now back to the news. Astronomers found a new Earth-sized planet that might be able to support life. They named it Kepler-1649c. CNN reports it's about 300 light-years away, orbiting a star in what's called the habitable zone. That means it is just the right distance from its star where liquid water can exist on its surface, and the temperature could be somewhat comfortable. But don't plan to move away from Earth just yet. In Gadget reports, it doesn't get as much light as we do, and scientists have no idea what kind of atmosphere it has, so that could shift the temperature estimate. It's likely the planet is actually more like Venus than Earth. For now, astronomers will keep researching. A new first-of-its-kind ventilator just got emergency approval from the FDA, and this design costs a lot less to produce than existing ventilators. TechCrunch reports instead of $20,000 or $25,000 to produce one, the so-called Conventor takes just $1,000 per device. That could help speed up production and make them more affordable to the hospitals who need them ASAP. Of course, ventilators are the machines that help severely ill patients continue to breathe, and they've been in short supply because of the volume of COVID-19 cases. The new design first came from the University of Minnesota, and now the university says it'll make the specs open source so they can be manufactured anywhere around the globe. Lyft is switching things up since social distancing means people aren't taking rides as usual. The rideshare company is now delivering things like food, medical supplies, and other necessities through a pilot program called Essential Deliveries. Drivers are basically running errands for healthcare and government agencies, as well as businesses and nonprofits. So the drivers might deliver food to a senior facility or maybe drop off life-sustaining medical supplies to someone in need. Right now, the delivery service is available in nearly a dozen cities like Atlanta, San Francisco, and Dallas, and Lyft says it plans to expand in the coming weeks. As for the drivers, they do get paid the same as any other standard ride. And the deliveries are contact-free, which will hopefully keep them safe too. Apple has officially announced a new iPhone SE. It's a lower-cost device as the pandemic has people cutting back on spending. This iPhone starts at about $400. The Verge reports it looks like an iPhone 8, so it has the home button with Touch ID. But there are some more modern specs, like a better camera and processor, and even a lower price tag. It comes in black, white, and product red. And just like other iPhones, it comes with a free year of the streaming service Apple TV+. Online orders start Friday. They'll ship out later this month. And speaking of Apple, Apple Maps is now tracking social distancing. The feature anonymously tallies how often people are asking Apple Maps for directions and uses that info to recognize how often people are out and about. Keep in mind, Apple's not tracking individual movements, just trends. Anyone can follow along on a website, but it's really meant for healthcare workers and government agencies to predict an upcoming outbreak. Microsoft co-founder Bill Gates and his wife Melinda Gates are giving another big boost to the coronavirus fight. The Gates Foundation announced another $150 million grant. It'll be used to get essential medical supplies to poorer nations and help companies produce products and vaccines. This is the third big commitment from the Gates Foundation. Also, Prince Harry and Meghan Markle are contributing as well. They're donating more than $100,000 to the organization Feeding Britain to help alleviate hunger during this pandemic. Harry and Meghan apparently used the money they made from broadcasting their royal wedding. And that's it for the main news today, but now it's time for Thing to Know Thursday, where a different expert explains a different thing to know only on Thursdays after the news. And this week, we're talking about COVID-19 treatments, including a couple of them getting a lot of national attention, and we also touch on testing and what everyone should know about it. Our guest today is on the front lines of this work. Dr. Aruna Subramanian is an infectious disease doctor and clinical medical professor at Stanford University. She's working directly with some COVID-19 patients. She's leading Stanford's arm of a nationwide trial for a potential treatment. So here's my conversation with Dr. Aruna Subramanian. I want to say thank you to you and all the healthcare workers doing this important work. Can you give us an idea of what it's been like for you through this pandemic?
For me personally, it's been very humbling. I feel like the patients and their families have been so thankful to be able to have options for these clinical trials and antiviral agents. And they're on their own. Their families are not allowed to visit. But it's amazing how resilient they've been and how understanding the families have been when we've talked to them. So I've never seen anything like this. It has been exhausting, but it's also very soul satisfying. I'm just so amazed by the patients I've met on this journey. And I hope we can help more people with our treatments.
Where would you say things stand right now when it comes to our understanding of treatments for COVID-19?
Initially, I think things were pretty desperate. And people were sort of randomly using different compounds that they thought might work and really doing last-ditch efforts for people who were quite sick. Now I think we're approaching it a little more scientifically, and we have more clinical trials that we're trying to treat patients on. We're not just randomly prescribing medications.
Probably the most publicized treatments that we've heard about because of President Trump promoting them is hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine. Can you explain what those drugs are and any thoughts or experience that you have had with them?
They're malaria drugs, chloroquine is, and hydroxychloroquine is used in autoimmune diseases, sort of as an anti-inflammatory, but they do have some antiviral activities. So while these were initially quite promising to study, people were using them very haphazardly and giving them to large groups of people. We do need to know if they work and in whom they work. Do they work in mild disease or more severe disease? Should they be combined with other drugs? And unfortunately, people just published all sorts of not very well-reviewed data. They were more anecdotal because they would be series of people. There was one study from France where they actually removed the patients who went to the ICU or who died. And you can't do that when you're actually doing a clinical trial. So it's very hard to make any real conclusions based on the studies that have so far been published. But thankfully, there are some good studies ongoing, and hopefully we'll get an answer.
Are they still being given to patients? And have you even, you know, had to decide whether or not to give it to a patient?
We're not using them routinely, definitely not recommended. We don't happen to have any clinical trials at my hospital yet using hydroxychloroquine. But if it was part of a clinical trial, we might consider using it. Though I have had patients that I've approached for other trials, antiviral trials, where they've specifically heard on the news that they should be on hydroxychloroquine and azithro, and they've requested that. In the few patients that have come in on it who have been given it by their primary care providers or others, I have not seen it help because these are the patients that are getting admitted and worsening in terms of their symptoms.
Are there any other treatments that you want to mention that have some promising signs to them? And if nothing else, what do you think the timeline looks like to have a treatment that's more concrete and evidence-based?
Sure. The types of treatments that we're studying right now are first antivirals. So these are things that directly affect the virus. The drug that we're studying that seems quite promising now, but we're waiting for the data, is called remdesivir. There are other antivirals that are promising that should be studied. There are also another class of agents. So a lot of the symptoms that you're seeing from COVID-19 are actually the body's response to the virus. And that's why the pneumonia and respiratory distress syndrome can all occur. And so there's a thought that if you can modulate or reduce that inflammatory response, people may have better outcomes. So there are different things being studied in this arena. Then the other treatments that are promising are convalescent plasma, that is taking blood from patients who have had COVID-19, and then using that blood, the plasma from them, is rich in antibodies against the virus. And then eventually this summer, hopefully we'll have monoclonal antibodies, which are very specific against the virus. They showed promise in diseases like Ebola and other things. And then eventually, I think a vaccine would be ideal. And there are many people working on different types of vaccines. So the antivirals, hopefully we'll have some data at least on remdesivir within the next month or two. The convalescent plasma, we should know fairly soon. Monoclonal antibodies probably by the summer, and vaccines probably in 1.5 years or so, we should know.
And it's my understanding both treatments and testing are important before we can ease the restrictions on social distancing.
You're right. Understanding of the testing and the treatments. There may be a second wave or stuttering of cases coming in. So we will need good treatments at that time. But the testing will also help in terms of serology, knowing who has antibodies to the virus. We don't yet know how protective that those antibodies are and how long they're going to last, but it'll be important to be able to know, you know, who has seen the virus and whose body can produce some sort of immune response to it.
Yeah, so those are the blood tests. Are there still concerns about the accuracy of them? Because most of them, if not all, don't have FDA approval.
The blood tests that are done in academic centers are probably a little more reliable in that they are very rigorously tested and retested, and we can actually compare them to the PCR assays, which are the swabs, which tell you how much virus you have in your nasopharynx, in your tissues. The blood tests that are done on the outside, there are some at-home tests and drive-by tests and quick tests that are being looked at for serology. Those are the ones that will need a little more rigorous study to really know their accuracy.
So I guess what's the takeaway for the average person who may eventually get one of these tests? Should they rely on it?
Our takeaway is that you have to be careful. And even if we ease social distancing measures, we still have to do proper hand hygiene and the other things that have been instituted in terms of staying home when sick and being extra cautious now that we know how bad this pandemic can be.
And you can learn more about our guest and this topic in today's show notes. In fact, find more about all of the news stories mentioned today at thenewsworthy.com. Just click episodes and look for today's date. Thank you so much for listening. The Newsworthy is here for you by 4 a.m. every weekday. We'll be back tomorrow with the news you need to know for Friday and the weekend. Until then, have a great day.